Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, leaving Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio in the dust right here in their home state of Florida. That, according to the latest poll, taking a snapshot of the 2016 presidential race. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show is always live at 9. And now, never miss a program. You can subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, right on the heels of Sarah Palin endorsing Donald Trump, we'll tell you about that new poll finding Trump still leading the GOP field right here in Florida. Get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937 as we break down those numbers and take your calls. Also this morning, the Ringmaster from The Greatest Show on Earth will tell us about this week's Ringling Brothers Circus coming to town and the big announcement involving the elephants leaving the circus after this year. Then later, actress Loretta Swit, she'll have a preview of the big MASH cast reunion in our area this weekend and how you can meet all of the stars of that beloved sitcom. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, just as Sarah Palin announces her support for Republican frontrunner Donald Trump, new poll numbers show that Trump and Ted Cruz lead the field in Florida among likely Republican voters. That, according to a new poll out Monday for the Florida Times Union, Trump is the choice of 31% of GOP primary voters in the state. He's got a 12-point lead over Ted Cruz at 19%. Meanwhile, the state's two favorite sons are running far behind. Florida's former governor Jeb Bush is at 13% in Florida to Senator Marco Rubio's 12%. Now, with the first round of voting in the 2016 election just a few weeks out in the Iowa caucuses, we're going to begin the hour this morning with a closer look at the state of play in the 2016 race. On the line from St. Petersburg, we welcome pollster Matt Towery. He's founder of Insider Advantage. They conducted this most recent poll. Matt, a pleasure to have you on the show. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
And joining us in studio, two analysts, Mike Binder of UNF's Political Science Department. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
Good to have you. And Stephen Baker, he is with the Political Science Department at Jacksonville University.
Good morning.
And here's our question to callers. As Donald Trump leads the field of GOP primary voters in Florida, we want your calls and comments. What are your thoughts about the Trump campaign? Who will you support for president? Get on the line now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show or weigh in on our Facebook page. Matt Towery, as you pointed out in these poll results that you released Monday, published in the Florida Times Union, Donald Trump followed by Ted Cruz, leaving Florida's two favorite sons, Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio, in their rearview mirror in their home state. Not what either Bush or Rubio want to see as they look ahead to the March 15th primary, which is coming up here in Florida, and it's a winner-take-all primary. Can you begin by sharing with us how this poll was conducted?
Sure. Let me just start for those who are my readers in the Times Union each week. My opinion column has nothing to do with my polling, so I need to make that very clear.
Okay.
The poll is conducted by Opinion Savvy, which is an offshoot of Insider Advantage, and I don't see the numbers until I get them. The way it was conducted, and polling, of course, has changed in recent years, and there have been many challenges to it. It's a combination of phone calls. They are automated phone calls, IVR, which we have proved to be very accurate for us, at least in Georgia and Florida and some of the southern states in particular. And then also we use mobile units as well. And what that is it's not a call to a cell phone, because you can't get young people to talk on a cell phone very long. Anyone who knows anyone who's under 30, they won't talk to you more than 15 seconds on a phone. They want to text. So instead, they receive the same poll via their email or whatever on the mobile phone, and then they answer it. And that has proved to be an effective way to get younger voters. So that is conducted over usually a 1 or 2 day period, very short period of time, and then it's weighted for age, race, gender. And that brings everybody up to even par once we take into account the differences between the raw data and what the demographic spread might be or makeup of a given state, such as Florida. And then you have your results.
And you're showing support for Trump across all age groups and across the ideological spectrum in the Florida GOP, people who identify as very conservative or more moderate, correct?
Yes, and that's not a shocker, because we poll for Fox affiliates in Florida, Georgia, and other states. And we actually polled several states at one time, including South Carolina, for the Augusta Chronicle. And in all of those states, Trump was leading among virtually every demographic, all age groups. And in fact, we broke this down into political ideology or philosophy. And Trump was leading from those who described themselves as very conservative to, imagine this, those who described themselves as very liberal. If there are such animals existing in the Republican Party, I guess there are. And they also chose Donald Trump. So, yes, he's leading among every demographic, at least right now.
The number to join the show this morning, 549-2937. Now the First in the Nation Iowa caucus is coming up in just a few weeks. Last night on an Iowa stage, former Republican vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin endorsed Donald Trump for president. Let's take a listen.
Are you ready to make America great again? Are you ready for a commander-in-chief? You ready for a commander-in-chief who will let our warriors do their job and go kick ISIS ass?
Mike Binder with UNF's Political Science Department. How does that endorsement affect the candidacy of Donald Trump?
I'm not sure that it really matters a great deal. What we've seen over the last 8-9 months or so with Donald Trump is he tends to have a following that is very supportive of him. He is struggling to bring in others, and I'm not sure that Sarah Palin is the type of voice that's able to either reach across the aisle or reach across the Republican Party to maybe some more of the establishment folks that are a little more hesitant to get on board the Trump train.
Stephen Baker, let's talk for a minute about the general election in Florida. Matt Towery's poll looked at only likely Republican voters. Let's move ahead to November of 2016, when we will be looking at a very different electorate. Let's assume for the moment that the Democratic nominee is Hillary Clinton. And let's assume that the Republican nominee, we don't know yet who it will be, but let's assume it's Donald Trump. Some polling has shown a very competitive matchup in Florida against those two candidates in the Sunshine State. What are your thoughts about that potential matchup?
Well, I guess I would start out with, are Trump's voters, are supporters fans or voters? And that seems to be the key issue here. Trump is a different sort of animal in politics, and it's pretty hard to use the standard models in order to make a projection on the basis of Trump, especially when you see that during the nomination, he might not do as well in the primaries as is predicted. If you look at the Florida voters, for example, in 2008, only 40% of the registered Republicans voted in that presidential preference primary, and in 2012, 47%. So when you take these broad polls of the population, sometimes you're not really getting a sample of the people who really will vote.
What about that, Matt Towery?
Well, that might be true. I mean, certainly, I don't know if that really spreads over to the poll, because one of the things we do is we screen for likely voters. But that having been said, I agree with this. The comment that Trump is more, perhaps has more of a fan base than he does a voter base, may well be true. There are two schools of thought about Trump, and we won't know either one until we get through these early caucuses and primaries. One school of thought is exactly what was just expressed, and that is that potentially Trump's voter numbers could be lower than the percentage of people who say they like him. The other side is there's a belief that Trump may bring new, and we do have some evidence from some polling we've done, that Trump brings a different type of voter to the polls. And we're going to find out in Iowa, for example. I don't think Iowa's always the best test case, but we'll look at it and see. If Trump is able to pull people out to those caucuses who don't normally go, and of course we all know that's what Barack Obama did back in 2008, well, then you've got something really on your hands of a phenomenon that we'll really have to look after. If he's not able to, if people say, oh, we like Trump, but they eat his food and go to his movies and ride in his helicopter, but they don't vote for it, well, then I think we're going to see that, that Trump might not be able to hold this together as he gets through these states, because his organization is relatively weak as compared to, say, Ted Cruz and probably Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio as you get into these states closer to Florida.
Mike Bender, organization does matter in some of these early states, like Iowa, like New Hampshire. And Ted Cruz, who is running second here in Florida, is actually favored to win Iowa, in part due to strong organization. What about that piece of this as we look ahead to these early states?
Yeah, and I think the one thing to keep in mind, organization absolutely matters, and I don't want to downplay that at all, but with all of these primaries, you get such little ideological divide within the Republican primary. And you see this less so this year with the Democratic primary, but in other years, the movement from one candidate to the next isn't that big. So when you see polling data with primaries, it's important to keep in mind these things are fluid. They can change.
Sure.
Yes, Trump has been consistent around that 30% mark, but everybody else tends to move a little bit. And if he can't get above this 30-35% range, that means there's two-thirds of the Republican Party that aren't supporters of his.
And let me ask you about this, too. Stephen Baker, a recent piece on the website Politico.com, found that the one characteristic that sets apart a Donald Trump supporter above all others is a tendency toward authoritarianism, that voters that like Donald Trump tend to lean authoritarian. What are your thoughts about that?
He does provide a comfort level for those who feel frustrated with the system, as though they're left out of the system. And that does seem to be the one unifying factor of all his supporters. So he does, if you read The Art of the Deal, he talks about truthful hyperbole and the pleasure people take in being given a line. As long as a storyline makes them feel good, you're going to make the sale. You're selling the sizzle, not the steak. And so he's very good at that. And that might take him pretty far in terms of public opinion polling. But then remember John Dean in 2004, who was very popular, but once as they got
you
closer
mean Howard to, Dean.
I mean, yeah, John, yeah, right, Howard Dean, I'm sorry.
You're going back to Watergate.
Oh, way back, right. In 2004, Howard Dean was well ahead in the Democratic primary. Then he had that one moment in which people started to think, well, maybe we're just not quite ready for him, and they withdrew support dramatically from him. Trump might face the same thing.
Let's go to your calls right now, 549-2937. Mitchell is in Palatka this morning. Hi, Mitchell. Good morning.
Hey. Am I on the air now?
You are.
Well, the thing about Trump is he would be helped if he'd get a pair of prescription glasses so he doesn't squint at the world constantly and can never figure out what's going on. You know, it's pitiful. And Ted Cruz is actually a very good talker, and he would make a magnificent candidate for a prime minister of Canada, since he's a naturally born Canadian citizen. But my personal solution to this flood of idiotic candidates is I have registered myself as a write-in candidate for president in all 50 states.
Oh, is that right?
And
yes, so you have. So it sounds like you've got some pretty strong organization, then, Mitchell. I applaud you for that. That's no small feat.
Very little organization. It's a lot of fun. I ran mayor of Atlanta on two occasions.
Really?
And governor of Georgia on three occasions. And my policy is have a lot of fun, but don't waste a lot of good money on it.
You know, I wish more people had that policy, honestly. I really do. That's Mitchell down in Palatka. Thanks, Mitchell.
Thank you.
Matt Towery, if only more people had that policy, we wouldn't, maybe more people wouldn't be so turned off by our politics.
Yeah. My other home was in Atlanta, and I was at one time the nominee for lieutenant governor. I somehow missed Mitchell in the contest. But good luck, Mitchell.
I know. Hey, Mike Bender, what about his crack about Ted Cruz running for prime minister of Canada? Donald Trump is trying to make hay out of Ted Cruz not being a natural-born citizen, and it's not catching on with most Republican primary voters.
Right, and this is, you know, Trump was doing this with Obama, and it's this, I don't want to say silly, but it is. It's silly, and the man's a citizen. He was, you know, parent citizen. I mean, it's unnecessary, and it really distracts from the fact that there's actual issues to be discussed, and they're not doing it with this sort of stuff.
Here's a tweet from Crystalis. Please mention the other Democratic candidate who wouldn't have a competitive match versus Donald Trump. Bernie Sanders, according to polls. She's right. Bernie Sanders, according to the latest polling, would actually beat Donald Trump handily in this state.
Well, I think both candidates, both Trump and Bernie Sanders, face a problem is that they need to get through the nomination process. I can't see a path for Bernie Sanders to win that nomination. And believe it or not, I still think Donald Trump faces an uphill climb in the Republican primary.
Let's go to Stephen in Jacksonville. Hi, Stephen. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I just want to probably, I guess, speak for the youth vote. I'm 30 years old, been voting since the first Bush Jr. election back in 2000. I'm just curious that in the age of information that so many people are voting on purely emotion and, like you said, a fan base that's following a certain individual. And in my instance of actually like doing a lot of thorough scouring of information, they've in the past kind of have voted more libertarian throughout the party, and to see a real possible libertarian candidate throughout the party have and vouch for a lot of the core values of the GOP get completely ignored, you're going to lose a lot of votes in the primary of the GOP election, or in the primary election this coming season. And it's frustrating because we have some really good candidates in that field, but you're going to probably wind up getting a lot of people voting third party again.
Well, let me ask you as a follow-up, what do you see as the core values of the GOP, Stephen? Because at least in this cycle, I think that what we're seeing laid bare is that not everyone's on the same page when it comes to that question.
Well, it's funny. It's like we the party is spending, limited government, less involvement in your life, less overseas involvement, unless it's constitutionally, agreed upon by powers of Congress. And all of that's being ignored at this time. And it seems like it's going to be continually repeated regardless of if the Republican or Democrat's in office. And I'm totally disenfranchised at this point. I was last election watching the electoral vote very closely and saw a lot of the youth vote disenfranchised at that point. We got a Romney vote shoved down our throat. And I'm surprised I'm still staying this long, but I think it's been more for just primary vote quotas, so I'm allowed to vote in each election. That's my two cents at this point.
All right. Thank you, Stephen. Dr. Baker.
The real problem the Republican candidates face is that the most active members of the Republicans who are going to determine the nomination tend to be very conservative, especially on social issues. And in order to get a majority of those people, the Republicans tend to get locked into these fairly socially conservative positions, and the emphasis of the campaign is on that, makes it very difficult for them to pivot and prepare themselves for the general election. We've seen that the last couple times in the Republican candidates. The process of getting the nomination has tainted them so much that they are become more difficult to pass the general election test.
And the thing is that those social issues are not government hands-off. Those are much more government interventionism.
Matt Towery, would you agree with that?
Well, I would agree to this extent. If you want to look at how the Republican Party did after the Terry Schiavo incident, do you remember when there was a Sunday convening of the U.S. Senate to pass a law basically to mandate that the feeding tube not be removed from Terry Schiavo? At that moment, the Republicans began to drop in the polls, and it took years to recover. So I do agree with them that sometimes the Republican approach of their conservative ideology sometimes appears to be too much for the public. That said, this looks like, guys, I hate to tell you, but the stock market is melting down. We have an oil crisis in the opposite direction. We may be stalling out economically. We certainly have more trouble internationally than we've seen in recent years. And with all of that at play, I'm not sure the social issues are going to matter very much. In fact, if you've noticed in the debates, they've hardly come up. Most of the time, the issues have related to either the economy or to matters related to some issues such as guns do come up, but for the most part, We haven't heard a lot of talk about abortion. We haven't heard a lot of talk about some of the other issues that have really tied the Republicans down in the past. So I'm not sure that's going to play as big a role this year. Of course, as these gentlemen know, we all know, circumstances can change on a dime. Howard Dean being a good example that was given just a few minutes ago. So one slip of the tongue can change the entire race.
Yeah, he's right in that issues like abortion and gay marriage haven't really dominated so much as terrorism and immigration. That now that's really dominated on the Republican side. So, but Mike Bender, how can a general election candidate build a broad appeal, particularly among Hispanic voters here in, let's say, right here in Florida?
Well, the problem is there is no broad appeal to be had. There is wide diversity of opinion amongst the electorate, even amongst Hispanics. But if you want to talk about here in Florida, the Cuban vote is wildly different than other Central American Hispanics and their opinions on abortion. So unless there is some type of consensus amongst the populace, it's wildly unlikely that you're going to be able to see a candidate build a consensus that doesn't exist.
Let's go to Ryan on the east side. Hi, Ryan. Good morning. What are your thoughts this morning?
Good morning. Hi, Melissa. Yeah, this is a very broad topic that could have so much, you could have a book written about it. But what amazes me is the extent to which the Republican Party has been hijacked by this incredible philosophy of almost demonizing the opposite party. It's not just disagreement or dislike, it's actual demonizing of someone who doesn't agree with you who's in the opposite camp in the Democratic Party. Donald Trump, to me, is riding a crest of the last 8 years of just this continual demonizing of the Democratic Party and whoever is not on their team. Donald Trump, to me, is showing an incredible intolerance toward any opposition by anything the Democratic Party has to say. I think this has been a strategy of the Republican Party since Obama took office, when they decided he was only going to be a one-term president and that they were going to make sure that this occurred. Their very strategy from the month he was first inaugurated was to make him a one-term president. And this demonizing of Obama and the Democratic Party has not ceased, and Donald Trump is riding the crest of it. Thank you so much.
Ryan, thanks for the call. Dr. Baker, what about that? And also, let me just ask you, playing devil's advocate to his point, Donald Trump not only has been critical of Barack Obama, he's been critical of everyone running against him for this nomination as well.
Everyone.
Anyone he sees is standing in his way. But what do you think?
That has certainly been the case, and he's gotten a lot of mileage about running against the media as well.
And the media.
Because it's a perfect foil for him. He is running against all the things that frustrate many voters, that make them feel powerless. And he's giving
anything
them a
chance.
Anything
seen as an institutional establishment.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It's a one-size-fits-all. And so he's found it to be very powerful. It would be very difficult, if he ever did win the presidency, to convert that into a force, you know, to actually accomplish anything.
Matt Towery, did you ask any questions about why people indicated they liked Donald Trump in your poll?
Not in this poll. These are pretty flash polls, because we're trying to get a pulse of these states after each debate. But we have done some research into Trump. There are a couple of interesting things. One thing I want to point out, we live in an age in which we have just a plethora of reality television programs. I don't watch them, but they range everything from, Dating Naked, which was a show last year, all the way to the...
You don't watch that, Matt? You don't watch that?
No, I did watch an issue. My wife and I turned it off immediately, but we thought it was pretty funny. That having been said, we've got a different electorate out there. And for us to believe the people that there's a small percentage of the electorate that really represent the old style and the growing percentage of the electorate are growing up in a world in which they're used to this sort of programming and this sort of lifestyle, and it's also a very celebrity-oriented America that we have now. So Trump is appealing to people who we would just never even consider. I mean, Donald Trump, if someone had come up to me 10 years ago and said Donald Trump would be president, I would have laughed. I would have never quit laughing. But the fact of the matter is the country is changing. And I want to make one note, though, that because this process for the Republican nomination, 60% of the delegates to be awarded at the convention will be awarded proportionately. That means that they're not going to be a winner-take-all. So if Trump can hold his 30-something percent, he doesn't have to do much better than that to really get down to the Florida and still potentially be in the lead. If he were able to, I don't think he'll win Iowa, but it's possible, but if he were to win New Hampshire as he has, as he's leading right now, carry South Carolina where he has a huge lead, and go into these SEC primary states, these southern states, where he's leading in all of those states, if he were able to hold that situation and keep his 30% or so, he would have enough delegates to keep himself in this game all the way to the convention, which I believe the convention may well be brokered this time. There are a lot of rules in place that will block Trump from taking it straight up. And the way they've divided up the delegates this time, unless something changes, I think we may have no one going into the convention with the ability to take the nomination.
Mike Binder, GOP party leaders, it has been reported in recent weeks, have been huddling amongst themselves, already planning for the possibility of a brokered convention this summer, already planning to figure out a way to somehow deny Donald Trump the Republican nomination.
I'm skeptical that it's going to get to that point, mostly because, you know, right now we still have almost a dozen Republican candidates in the field. That won't be the case once we get to these SEC primaries. People are going to start falling out. There's a lot of candidates that have pinned their hopes on a miracle showing or even a Bill Clinton-esque third place in New Hampshire to keep going. When they start to fall, what happens to their 2%, their 3%, their 5%? I don't think they're going to Trump. And if they're not going to Trump, they're going to coalesce around potentially an alternative candidate.
And who would that be in your view?
It could be any number of candidates. I don't think Jeb Bush is dead in the water yet. I think Rubio has a chance. I think Cruz has a chance. I mean, Kasich has maybe an outside chance. But those, it's still early, and we haven't even cast a ballot in Iowa yet, so we've got time.
Haley is in Mayport. Hi, Haley. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am curious as to why more, I guess, quote-unquote, establishment Republicans aren't reaching out to the other candidates who are in opposition of Trump, like Bush or Cruz or any of the other ones. Is it because, you know, just being in opposition of Trump just automatically means you get shut down by the media or by his supporters? Or why is it that no one else is trying to lift up these other people, considering the fact that they are definitely trying to deny Trump or be in opposition of Trump having the nomination? I do have another question. I'm from Louisiana, and this is going to be my first time voting in Florida. And I wanted to make sure that for the primaries, do I have to be registered in either party? I have no party affiliation currently.
Okay,
so
all right.
My two questions.
Yeah, thank you, Haley. Okay, Dr. Baker, Stephen Baker.
Right. With this regard to the second question, yes, you do have to be registered in the primary, in the party to vote in Florida. It's a closed primary. But with regard to the first question, as far as Donald Trump goes, the party has been handling him with kid gloves. They're afraid he might run as an independent, so they don't want to appear as though they're really being unfair to him. But the logical beneficiary of much of this might well be Paul Ryan, because he's sitting back there. He has the reputation for bringing people together. He's consciously created this reputation, and he likes the idea of being called on to come down and do things. He wanted to be chair of the Ways and Means Committee, but they prevailed on him to be House Speaker. And he will be the chair of the Republican convention. If it does become a brokered convention, he may rise up to that. And he would be very well positioned. The media would love this story. Oftentimes the media are accused of being liberal, and yet they would be so tied into the notion of this grand confrontation between the old order of Hillary Clinton and the new order of Ryan. And he's been consciously creating this sort of the guy who walks on water. In fact, he just got rid of his beard. But it's sort of like he is in the wings and the one that the Republicans could turn to if they have a very nasty convention, because that would eliminate the nastiness.
Lots of emails, comments on our Facebook page. Claire emails the show. The reason Trump is so dominant in the polls is that he is so different from this large field. people like Bush, Rubio, Christie, Cruz, they're all splitting the vote of all the rest. If it were a two-person race, say Trump versus Rubio, I don't think Trump's surprising strength would be looking quite the same. And here is an email from Laura on the South Side. Your guest is wrong, pertaining to Ted Cruz. Per the Constitution, Article 2, Section 1, no person except a natural-born citizen, a citizen of the United States, at the time of the adoption of the Constitution shall be eligible to the office of president. Cruz is not a natural-born citizen, regardless of his mother's citizenship. She was neither on active-duty military nor diplomatic duty when he was born in Canada. He was born outside the borders of this country. Ted Cruz is not a natural-born citizen. Mike Binder.
Except that he is the problem.
That is up for debate, though. That is legitimately up for debate.
Well, okay, great. So let's find out then, I guess, is the answer. Because here's the question. So you're on vacation, you're pregnant, you have a kid. Your kid's not a citizen of this country.
But according to the Constitution, you have to be born within the borders of this country to run for president.
Let's put it this way. If Ted Cruz somehow wins the Republican nomination, I don't think that's a given by any stretch. And if somehow he's able to beat Hillary Clinton, another tough climb, but much more manageable, and he becomes president, there is no way on the face of the planet that the Supreme Court is going to rule him ineligible. It's just not going to happen. And if it does, I will be happy to come on this program and say that I will never come on this program again. I will retire from my job and I will stop talking about politics.
Matt Towery, let's close with you.
I agree with him, although it is not a settled issue. And I'll point the reason why. If you recall the issue with Obama and the great birther issue with him, and it wasn't until they produced the long form that showed that he was actually born in Honolulu that they gave up on that issue. So I think, while I agree with him, I don't think the Supreme Court would rule that he could not be president. I do think it will be an issue that will continue to be raised throughout the election season. Whether that hurts or not, we'll see. It may just sort of drift away.
Thank you, gentlemen, all three of you, for joining us this morning. We'll continue to follow it, of course, on this program. Thanks for being here, guys.
Good to see you. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Pollster Matt Towery, UNF's Mike Binder, and GU's Stephen Baker all on the show today. Much more still ahead later in the hour.
We're going to auction off a round of golf with Jamie, lunch or dinner with Mike and or Loretta. And Ed, of course, is the world's greatest MC. And a mystery guest, which I cannot even talk to you about because we want to keep it a mystery.
MASH star Loretta Swit joins the show, a preview of her big appearance this week. It's your chance to meet all the stars of MASH. We'll tell you about it. But up next, the circus is in town. We'll speak to the ringmaster about why the elephants are leaving the Big Top. That's next.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
By some estimates, more than 30 million people in the world today live in slavery, toiling in mines, quarries, and shrimp farms without pay or any hope of escape. On the next Fresh Air, Kevin Bales talks about his reporting on humans held in bondage and the environmental havoc slavery wreaks on the planet. Bale's new book is Blood and Earth. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Bobcat pelts are one of the most valuable and coveted wildlife products.
If it was all the way to the ground with the full sweep in the hood, could be $150,000.
We want this black and white, you know, like the Cruella de Vil, where she was all about the white with the black spots, you know, the Dalmatians. Same thing with the bobcats.
The beauty and cruelty of fur on the next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
When it comes to redeveloping downtown Jacksonville, the best laid plans have often turned sour because of spiraling costs or problems with infrastructure. But despite setbacks, the city has made strides in recent years. In Community Thread Downtown Developing, we talk with the movers and shakers who are transforming downtown and meet others who say challenges still remain. Log on to wjct.org/events/community-thread to submit your questions or to RSVP to be part of our studio audience on February 11th.
Falling oil prices don't just affect what you pay at the pump for your car. They also make jet fuel cheaper, and that's turning into more affordable flights for consumers.
Airfares are trending down as we're seeing about 14 or 15% lower this year than we have in the past.
Looking to get away? Why now may be the time to book that trip. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News. Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
We're going to do a little test here, so pay attention, all right? Who is this?
I'm not good enough just to flip in and out of, you know, my Brit accent to my American accent.
Damian Lewis, he's a Brit with a new show, one of the stars of Billions. Next time on Marketplace, it's from 8 p.m.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Welcome back. Well, for more than 100 years, they've been known as the greatest show on earth. But this year, Ringling Brothers has announced a big change at the circus after years of protests from animal rights activists. Ringling says it's going to phase out elephants from the production. That change will happen later this year. Now, the circus comes to Veterans Memorial Arena for 4 days in downtown Jacksonville beginning tomorrow. We are so excited because the ringmaster, Jonathan Lee Iverson, is here now in his full regalia to tell us all about the major change and a look at what's inside the big top. Good morning. Good to see
you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages. I am your ringmaster, Jonathan Lee Iverson of Ringling Brothers and Bonham and Bailey, the greatest show on earth. We can't wait to play Jacksonville. It's one of my favorite places. Love it out here. It's nice and hot.
Yeah, and nice
sunny.
And warm here for
it's
you.
Perfect, because I'm a New Yorker. I don't need that trouble.
No. It's kind of chilly up there. And let me just say that you are looking quite splendid. This attire, I think, could be seen from space.
Well, yeah, this is, you know, this is just this old thing here. This is just my morning attire.
Right. You did that old thing. You just threw that on. No, this is an incredible outfit that you wear as ringmaster. Of course, you have to make a splash. Now, the circus has incredible traditions over 140 years old, but one of the traditions that has become quite controversial in recent decades is, of course, the use of live animals. Ringling announced that it's going to phase out elephants from the show in just a few months. This will be the last year that the circus will feature elephants. Can you talk a little bit about that decision? Because there will be protesters outside the circus again this week.
Well, there'll always be protesters. First and foremost, circus isn't circus without animals. We created the circus ring specifically for animals. Remember, circus is a celebration of living things. That's what it's about. As far as the elephants are concerned, this was an internal decision. This wasn't forced upon us. As you well know, we've been extremely successful in court. We've received $9.3 million from the ASPCA in a RICO suit. We received $15.75 million from the Humane Society of the United States. So this has nothing to do with animal rights. The courts have spoken. Science continues to speak. And so we decided on our own volition that it was time to phase them out. Change is what we do at Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey. It's like you said, we've been around for 146 years. That's longer than Coca-Cola and Major League Baseball. And you can't be around that long without change. We actually used to be under big top tents. There are those old enough to remember that. And when we moved from the big top tents to the arenas, there was a big brouhaha over that. But we continued to thrive. We moved from having three rings to one. And there was a big brouhaha over that. I remember that one. And we continue to thrive. We're about change. We're about evolution. Again, circus as a craft, as an industry, is a living evolutionary thing. That's what we do. So change is a part of it. We will still boast the world's greatest menagerie. We still take pride in our animal care. It is above industry standard, and it's above reproach. It's just the facts. You know, there will always be someone who will dream up whatever they wish. This is America. You have that right. You can do that. But reality is what it is, and tens of millions of circus fans know better when they attend our animal open house, which happens 90 minutes before our shows. When they come to our pre-shows, they see the animals again. And when they come to the shows, and the comments I hear from the audience, the paying patrons, who, by the way, every time they drop a ticket to a Ringling Brothers show, they're supporting animal conservation, because portions of every ticket goes to the Ringling Brothers Center for Elephant Conservation. So what I hear from children of all ages, people from all walks of life, oh my goodness, look how healthy they are. Look how bright they are. Look how intelligent they are. They're looking at rescue dogs. They're looking at miniature donkeys. They're looking at horses and kangaroos and pigs. And they're seeing their full glory. You know, I mean, we have to lose this fantasy of animals just frolicking in the woods, dancing to Alan Menken tunes. That's not real. You know, they have personalities. They have genius. They're like us. And circus has really been on the forefront of revealing that. No other, I mean, I can't think of any other.
So you disagree then with the protesters' push to say, why not be like Cirque du Soleil, just have human performers?
Cirque du Soleil is not circus. It's Cirque. Cirque is another genre altogether. Cirque deals with, Cirque is really almost, it's theater, basically. It's really theater. It's not circus. So I don't even give the protesters any regard. You know, I mean, I don't acknowledge people who really have no knowledge of what we do. It would be ignorant of me. It's beneath me, really. It's beneath our industry to do so. And I'm not saying that in a condescending manner, but it's just the truth. I mean, when science has spoken across the board, when the federal courts have spoken across the board, when audiences continue to speak, again, we've received over $25 million in restitution. And I'm mystified why the press doesn't point that out. I mean, if we're supposed to be guilty of such acts, what are we doing receiving 9.3 from the ASPCA in a RICO trial? 15.75 million from the Humane Society of the United States in a RICO trial.
Then let's talk then briefly about, let's wrap it up then by just talking about the fact that the circus does open tomorrow.
Yes.
It runs through Sunday. Tickets are available now. You are the ringmaster. And by the way, you are the first African-American ringmaster at Ringling, I'm told. You're also a classically trained opera singer. Is that
right? I am, actually, yeah. I was actually pursuing a career in opera when they found me. And I was auditioning for a dinner theater. And it so happened that the wonderful director of the dinner theater was also directing Ringling Brothers, and he wanted a singing ringmaster.
And, do you sing during the show?
Oh, absolutely. I've been singing. That's how they got me. They said, we want you singing. We have a great tradition of ringmasters who sing. It started with the great Howard Ronk, who himself was trained by a Metropolitan opera singer, and he was an opera singer himself. And so that's the vein in which I follow, the great Howard Ronk.
Wow. Yeah. Well, he is the ringmaster at the circus, the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, in town this week, starting tomorrow. Jonathan Lee Iverson, thanks for being here. Have fun.
Thank you for having me.
All right. And finally this hour, she is the beloved star from one of the most long-running and classic shows in American history, MASH. Actress Loretta Swit and almost all of her co-stars will appear at a special event in Ponte Vedra this weekend, along with actor Ed Asner. It's all to benefit the nonprofit Ayla's Acres. I spoke with Swit about the big event and why she and her co-stars are still so close, even today. Loretta Swit, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, there's so much excitement that you and your fellow cast members from MASH, along with Ed Asner,
yeah,
will all be walking the red carpet for this incredible gala. Tell us a little bit about what's going to be happening.
Well, a lot of fun, I know, and some serious fundraising for a very, very worthy cause, Ayla's Acres, and Peter's friends, and we're going to help a lot of animals. Mostly, I think everybody's going to have a great dinner and a great time. We're going to auction off
a round of golf with Jamie, lunch or dinner with Mike and or Loretta. And Ed, of course, is the world's greatest MC. And these dear friends of mine who are flying out to be supportive, and a mystery guest, with which I cannot even talk to you about because we want to keep it a mystery.
Is this a mystery guest from MASH as well?
I'm not sure I can even say that.
Okay.
Might tip the scales in your direction to catch, you know, to guess. So would like to keep it a big mystery and surprise. It's black tie. It's very festive. Beautiful appointments, and it's just very, very exciting that it's been a long time in the making, but that everything has come together, and we're hoping for an SRO.
This is really a long time coming, this goal. And Ayla's Acres, of course, a nonprofit supporting adoption, spay and neuter, and responsible care of animals based in St. Augustine. What has attracted you to this cause? Because you've been such a friend to this nonprofit over the years.
I met Fran, who's a one-woman army. I mean, she's incredible. Fran Charlson, who's the executive director. I met her at a fundraiser for HSUS 6 or 7 years ago. And we bonded immediately. We had so many things that we shared in common, but also she had arranged this particular fundraiser for Humane Society of U.S., and I was terribly impressed with her organizational skills, and it was a very successful fundraiser, and we became friends at that fundraiser, but at that point in time, coincidentally, I was considering doing a play in the Jacksonville. Well, she's based in St. Augustine. She said, oh, by all means, if you decide to do it, let us know, because I'm right there. I'm less than an hour away. Well, as it happened, I did do it. I did call her, and that's sort of what does Bogey say to Claude Rains? It's the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Mm-hmm.
So I got involved during my run there at the Alhambra. I got involved with Ayla's and Fran, and we did a quick pull together of my artwork, a little gallery, a little auction. And so we saw the potential of working hard and raising funds for Ayla's was there. And certainly when I'm in Florida, that's what I'm doing there. In the interim, we sublet a wonderful little house almost for a thrift store. And each room in this little house is devoted to a type of thrift item. So where the kitchen would have been would be all kitchen utensils and machines and so forth. And these are all thrift store items. And every penny goes to the support of Ayla's Acres. So there are so many things that Fran has organized that have come to fruition that are really helping our little no-kill shelter out. And
right.
It's very, very rewarding, and she's very inspiring.
That's wonderful. And they're so fortunate to have the star power of you, Loretta Swit, Jamie Farr, Mike Farrell, Ed Asner, and of course,
yes,
another celebrity to be announced at this event. We were saddened to see that another beloved MASH
Mike
star,
Harris, yes.
Wayne Rogers, yes, just passed. That was
yes.
very sad to see. But so many of the MASH stars are still doing such incredible acting and other work as you are. What's it like when you all get back together in the same room?
It's wonderful. We're a very, very close family. We just are always in touch about what's going on with each other. I knew Wayne would be passing, for example. Wayne not only was my dearest friend and colleague from MASH days, he became my business manager as well. So we were very close for very many, many, many years. I know his family and his friends. And so I kept my other MASH colleagues apprised of the situation as the family allowed me to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, and so forth. So, but that goes for all of our things. Bill Christopher, our dear priest, was ill some time ago, and we were all there, you know, with the texting and the emailing, and everybody knew what was going on. Everybody is very one for all for one, supportive, and it's the best kind of family there ever has been, because it's not based on blood, but heart and caring and respect and love. And it's something that I treasure. We all do.
Sure. Well, the fan community certainly treasures all of you as well. So it's going to be a really special evening here on the First Coast. And so many people will be delighted. Loretta Swit, thank you so much for giving us a few moments.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you, and have a beautiful day. God
you too.
Bless.
That was Loretta Swit, and again, she will be appearing with all of her MASH co-stars, along with star Ed Asner as MC, at the MASH Gala, a benefit for Ayla's Acres. It's coming up this Saturday at the TPC Sawgrass Clubhouse. Get your tickets now at aylasacres.org. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Diane Reams up next as the Supreme Court takes up the president's immigration plan that would shield more than 4 million people from deportation. A closer look just ahead. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.